I guess at this time of year, lots of us will be thinking about presents, Christmas presents. I heard recently about three wealthy sons, brothers, who had all emigrated to Australia, and they were all sending presents home to their dear mother. Because they're brothers, they're pretty competitive, and they were all trying to get her the best possible present that they could think of. The eldest son, he set the bar pretty high. He decided he was going to get his mum an open-top two-seater sports car. Next son didn't want to be outdone. He got his mum a big, brand-new house. Third son, he's got some real trouble, not sure quite what to do, but he thinks about his mum, thinks about the fact she's losing her sight, and he has this idea. He gets her a parrot, but not an ordinary parrot, a novelty, a one-off parrot that has been trained over years that you can just say to the parrot the chapter and verse, and the parrot will recite back to you exactly the verse from the Bible that you're saying. And they all wait around. They get this letter. They're gathered together on Christmas Day, having Christmas meal, and they open this letter from their mother, the thank you card, and it goes like this. Dear boys, what were you thinking? That car you got me, it's got hardly any room in the back. It's very impractical. And this big house, I've now got twice as many rooms to keep clean. At least one of you knows what his mother really appreciates. That chicken is delicious. Affectionately, your mother. Now, it is possible, isn't it, to have something very, very precious right there in front of us, a bit like the parrot, but to miss its true significance, its true importance. And my aim today is that you and I don't make that same mistake, that we don't miss the true significance of Christmas and why it is that Jesus came. As C.S. Lewis put it about this claim of God becoming human at Christmas time, he said, "If false, the claim is of no importance, and if true, of infinite importance. The only thing it cannot be is moderately important." So let's look at these verses together. You've got them there on the white sheets, which help us understand why it is that Jesus came and why Christmas is so important. Let me read from the top. In the sixth month, God sent the angel Gabriel to Nazareth, a town in Galilee, to a virgin pledged to be married to a man named Joseph, a descendant of David. The virgin's name was Mary. The angel went to her and said, "Greetings, you who are highly favored. The Lord is with you." Mary was greatly troubled at his words and wondered what kind of greeting this might be. But the angel said to her, "Do not be afraid, Mary. You have found favor with God. You will be with child and give birth to a son, and you are to give him the name Jesus. He will be great and will be called the Son of the Most High." Now, immediately I know, as modern readers, we're probably, some of us, already parting company with this text. We're struggling with it. Are we really expected to believe in such a primitive idea as a virgin conception, we're thinking? Haven't we outgrown that by now? But if that is you, do think about it. Suppose for a moment that there is a creator. And suppose that this almighty, eternal creator was to enter space and time. Would it surprise you if he were to do so in an unusual, perhaps even in a humanly impossible way? Well, of course, the creator can create however he chooses. So the question for you and for me is why? Why did God create Jesus' body in this unique and humanly impossible way? And the reason that we're given from these verses, and the first reason we're given for why Christmas is so significant, I've put it on the inside of the yellow sheets, is because Jesus came to live a perfect human life. Now this girl, Mary, she's not stupid. She clearly knows the facts of life. And so, in verse 34, she asks the question, "How will this be?" Mary asked the angel, "since I am a virgin." Verse 35, the angel answered, "The Holy Spirit will come on you, and the power of the Most High will overshadow you." Just as the Holy Spirit overshadowed the water at the beginning of the world and formed the first creation out of nothing, so the Holy Spirit is going to overshadow Mary to form a new creation in her womb. It is as though God is starting again from scratch. And verse 35 continues, "So the Holy One to be born will be called the Son of God." You see, because God is effectively starting again from scratch with Jesus, Jesus is not going to inherit our unholy, fallen nature. So you and I, by nature, we're like those grass bowling balls, aren't we? We're always veering off from what we were supposed to be. But unlike us, Jesus, the verse says, is going to be the Holy One. Now, the last person to be created from scratch by God was the first human being, Adam. And in two chapters' time, Adam is described using this same phrase, the Son of God. As we read through Luke's accounts, we discover that Jesus is being presented as a second Adam. Just as Adam was tempted way back then in the garden by the devil and failed, so Jesus, we learn, is being tempted by the devil in the desert. But unlike Adam, he wins again and again and again. So we're being told that just as Adam, the first man, started off history, when Jesus was born, it was like restarting history with a new humanity. But this time, Jesus lives a perfect human life. You see, this is a very, very big moment in the history of the world. In October this year, Toyota, the world's biggest selling car company, it declared that it was recalling more than 7 million vehicles worldwide because all of them had some serious electrical faults. And just like that, the event we're looking at today, it is like God is saying, look, all the other models were faulty. Not because God made us faulty, but because we chose to turn away from him. And so God says, look, I am starting from scratch with a new, uncorrupted human being. And what we see in the life of Jesus, which in your hands, or perhaps you're warming them up, I think they're on the table at the back. We didn't give them out. But there's a bunch of Luke's Gospels on the table at the back, which if you've never read, we would love for you to take home with you. I guarantee it is like no other biography that you will read this Christmas. But to give you a little taster of what you'll find in it, someone who previously read through this account described the life of Jesus like this. They said, Jesus combines qualities that no one has ever seen. Despite his incredible claims, we never see him pompous or offended or leaning on his own dignity. Despite being absolutely approachable to the weakest and most broken people, he is completely fearless before the proud and the corrupt. Despite being profoundly human and becoming weary and lonely and moved to joy and love and anger, yet we never see him moody. We never see him inconsistent. We never see him being strong where he should be tender or tender where he should be strong. Most interestingly of all, in the accounts in dealing with people, he is continually surprising us, shocking us, yet never disappointing us. It is difficult to imagine the word Jesus ought to have said or the deed he ought to have done. Nothing he does falls short. In fact, he is always surprising and taking your breath away because he is incomparably better than we could possibly imagine. And if you want to see, it's quite a glowing review, but if you want to see what this writer is talking about, please do take one of these away and check it out for yourself. Now, speaking personally, I have a self-righteous tendency to find people who are worse than me, sometimes in the media, people like Jimmy Savile perhaps, or sometimes in daily life. And then I use those people to prop up my sense of my own goodness. Well, at least I'm not like one of them. But do you see, Jesus shows us what human beings are supposed to be like. And next to him, we see that all our claims to be good and worthy are actually pretty shabby. Someone expressed it like this: Christmas is not a reminder that the world is really quite a nice old place. It reminds us that the world is a shockingly bad old place. Christmas is God lighting a candle. And you don't light a candle in a room that's already full of sunlight. you light a candle in a room that is so murky that the candle, when lit, reveals just how bad things really are. Now, I know everything I've said so far, it is not very flattering for you and for me. I mean, to be told that we're basically malfunctioning and that we need fixing. Perhaps you're thinking, isn't Christmas meant to be a positive message of joy and peace? And the answer is, yes, it is, but only once we've faced up to the bad news. The news that we as a race have turned from our Creator and His purpose for us and are now alienated from Him. And the reason Christmas is actually such wonderful news for every one of us is that Jesus came to live this perfect human life for a reason. And that reason, I've put there point two, is so that He could rescue us. In verse 31, the angel says to Mary, "You are to call Him Jesus." And later when the angel appears to Joseph, he adds, "You are to call Him Jesus because He will save or rescue His people from their sins." That's what the name Jesus means. So we're being given here this clue of why Jesus came. Jesus came to rescue humanity. Now, many of us will know of Dorothy Sayers. Dorothy Sayers was one of the first women to go up to Oxford University. She was a writer of detective fiction, most famously the Lord Peter Wimsey stories. And in the books, if you've read them, Lord Peter Wimsey was a single man, and he was very lonely. And in the middle of the stories, a woman appears, Harriet Vane. And Harriet Vane, like the writer, was also one of the first women to go up to Oxford. And Harriet Vane was also a writer of detective fiction. And so as we're reading, we're thinking, who is this Harriet Vane meant to represent? And then, as you read on, Harriet and Peter, they fall in love, they get married, and they solve mysteries together. And a lot of people have concluded that Dorothy Sayers looked into the world that she had created. And she saw this character, Peter, whom she had created. And she saw Peter's pain and his loneliness. And she fell in love with him. And she wrote herself into the story to save him. And actually, when we think about it, God has done something far more amazing than that. God looked into our world and saw us messing up the world and turning away from Him. And He saw us and He cared. He wept over us. He loved us. And He wrote Himself into the story. And for Him, that meant not just picking up a pen, but actually being born into that filthy animal trough. He lived the life that we should have lived, a perfect human life, but not principally as an example to us, but so that He could rescue humanity from death and judgment. Now, when somebody is grieving a death, people often try and comfort them by saying this. They say, well, death is just a natural part of life. I actually sourced that this week, and it's actually a quote from Yoda. But if you personally have ever experienced the death of a loved one, you will know with every fibre of your being that death is not a natural part of life. It is unnatural. It is an alien intruder into our world. You see, human beings were not made to die. We were made to live with God forever. And death only entered this world as a judgment on human sin, as we heard in that reading from Genesis 3. And so, by living the perfect human life, Jesus is the only human being who has ever lived who never deserved death and judgment. And so when He died on the cross, therefore it wasn't His own sins that He was paying for. It was ours. Jesus Himself said, "No one takes my life from me, but I lay it down of my own accord." Jesus deliberately and willingly took the hit for us. And now that that judgment has been paid in full, the way is now open for anyone to be restored to relationship with our Creator now, and ultimately to be fully transformed and to live with God forever in a renewed and perfected universe. I guess lots of us here, we won't feel like we're particularly opposed to Jesus, but perhaps we just don't see his relevance for our lives today. And if that is you, I'd ask you to look again at the real meaning of Christmas and to see what kind of a God it shows us. You see, he may not matter very much to you right now, but you matter a great deal to him. Enough for him to write himself into history and at great cost to rescue us from a dreadful fate. Now, if all of this is brand new, if it's news to you, please do take up this offer. Do take one of these Gospels home, read it over Christmas, and do sign up for the Christianity Explored course, which will be running in the new year. Because, as C.S. Lewis put it, Christianity, if false, is of no importance, but if true, is of infinite importance. And it really would be a tragedy, much worse than the loss of a novelty parrot, for any one of us to miss out on the true significance, the true importance of what Christmas is really about.